listeners. It's me, Marnetta Larimer, host here at Impacting the Classroom. As always, we like to kick off our conversation by asking, what's impacting the classroom? Well, today we have with us Avon Ford. Avon, can you introduce yourself to our audience?
Hello, I'm Avon Ford with the Children's Coalition for Northeast Louisiana. We are based in Monroe, and we are a 501c nonprofit. And we work with the surrounding parishes in our area, working to help create communities where children and families thrive.
Wonderful. Welcome, Avon. So good to see you again.
It is good to see you again. We've met before.
Yep. I always love when Louisiana is in the house. Good vibes always. So today we want to talk about how your program implemented class. What worked? What was the lessons you learned? And any recommendations you have for other programs? So the first question I want to ask you is, what was your first impression of class?
My first impression of class? It's a new tool. So I was first trained in the class 2008 pre-K tool back in either 2013 or 2014. So near about 10 years now. Prior to that, I was actually observing classrooms using the Itters and Eckers tool. So my first impression of class is, you know, there are some similarities with the interactions. And for what, you know, it was new. So it's like, okay, it's a little different. But once I learned the tool deeper, my impressions was this is going to continue to help get further children to be ready for school and further down the line.
That's wonderful. I remember when it first rolled out, you know, with Act 3, you know, 2012, Act 3 became, right, a mandate. And just, yes, there's some similarities with Itters and Eckers, but just the fear that engulfed the state of Louisiana, right, as this rolled out. So you had a very, very diplomatic way of approaching that. That's not what what's happening up in the north part of Louisiana.
Yeah.
This mandate that had to happen. And so that meant we had to implement it. So can you define us, your implementation team, and how it was formed?
Well, so as I mentioned earlier, so I've been with the Children's Coalition for 8 years this month of March. So I joined in 2016. So I actually joined the team prior to the implementation team being formed. And when I first came to the Children's Coalition, I came on as a child care specialist with the Child Care Resource and Referral Agency as a coach, where I would go into centers and work one-on-one with teachers to help further improve their practices and interactions with children. But with our implementation team, the way that it's ebbed and flowed and, you know, formed throughout the years, because, you know, we're always learning, always trying to, you know, what can we do a little bit better? What needs to be changed? So our implementation team, we've definitely worked to deepen our knowledge as a whole. So I am the class observation specialist in our office, where I oversee all the observations for our community lead agencies that we house in our building. So with our implementation team, you know, at this point in time, it starts with me, because I have that deep knowledge of class, that deep understanding of the tool and I'm also hold several of the certifications for train the trainer for the observation tools, as well as coaching MMCI. And so because of that deep knowledge, it has made sense for me to kind of be in this spot, because I do a lot of the double coding. In Louisiana, we call that shadowing, where, you know, there's two of us going out and doing observations, and I get to work one-on-one with our observers to also kind of coach them in furthering their knowledge of the tools and just kind of making sure, you know, where do you need some help? You know, what can I do to help you better understand? So with our implementation team, in the building is kind of small. However, we also contract out our observers. So we are actually quite a large team. I am actually responsible. We house 5 community lead agencies in our building. And so that averages, that tends to be anywhere between 480 to 485 classrooms that I have to ensure are observed in the fall and the spring. So we do contract out our observers. And if they're not trained, well, we get them trained because we have those in-house trainers, myself as well as other coworkers as well. And how our team gets formed, how our team grows as far as observers go, you know, while we do let people know, like, hey, we are looking for observers because we always can use more observers. Like I said, we have a large number of classrooms. We get more word of mouth for those who are interested in observing. And I will say it's very effective. And very often, you know, I'll be speaking to somebody and they'll say, oh, yeah, you know, I'm, you know, just last year I retired teaching pre-K. Oh, you're a retired pre-K teacher? Would you like something to do for a couple of days a week? And so that's the way that we kind of keep that team going and forming.
Wonderful. So what I heard you say is in your implementation process, it was about, first of all, your team leads getting certified in class in different age groups, right? But also through coaching.
Absolutely.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then you use that to build a base of observers so that you could collect the data that you needed. And so, and I'm going to piggyback on some of that.
Absolutely.
So my next question would be, and I'm just going to go on the vein of observations, how do you communicate with educators in the weeks leading up to their class observations?
So in Louisiana, we have a system that is called the Early Childhood Portal. And within this, this is going to house literally everything. So in the Early Childhood Portal, each site has a site administrator who has login information. And within that site is where I'll enter in the classroom names as they, you know, as they give them to me. Some people, you know, if it's a smaller center that may only have three classrooms, you may have your infant classroom, toddler classroom, pre-K classroom. Larger centers, you know, may use room numbers, you know. So I put in the classroom names as well as the lead teacher that they report to me. And then from there, once I schedule the observation, I put those observation orders into the early childhood portal. And when I do that, it sends an email to the observer letting them know that they have an observation they need to do. And then the site administrator can also see those dates for the classrooms as well. And so that's one way how we communicate. Then we also, you know, highly encourage our observers to call the day before just to confirm that it's still good, you know, because it could be, you know, recently, you know, we're coming out of winter. So, you know, there are times where we've had to reschedule observations because, you know, the observer goes to call and the director's like, oh, I'm so glad you called. We just had to send that teacher home with the flu. Okay. Well, you know what? We're going to see if we can reschedule that for a better day because it just might not be the best day for you. So that's just another way, additional way that we communicate with sites.
Wonderful. As we stated, you know, this became a mandate. We talked about some of the fury, like around that, right? What has been your most
effective? It's just the fear of the unknown.
It is, right? It's this thing. I think it's also in Louisiana, it came in different levels, right? Like it was also childcare facilities who were having those types of observations happening, you know, with them, whether they're public or private. And so, yeah, it's just this unknown of what's happening and, you know, but with the eye on what was important, which is, you know, children having the opportunity to have, you know, high quality interactions with their educators and caregivers. There were some real shifts in Louisiana due to that work.
Yeah, that was a lot of hard work. It's still going on.
Absolutely. So what has been your most effective methods in investing all the stakeholders in interactions and the class system?
Some of our more effective ways of getting that buy-in from our stakeholders, you know, which is a broad term, you know, that's our child care directors, that's principals that have pre-K classrooms, early Head Starts, Head Starts, as well as those out that may be out in the community, looking at the closer stakeholders, such as, like I said, directors, principals, and all of that is part of it is we, you know, Louisiana, we have what are called performance profiles, where, you know, at the end of the year, after all observations are completed, and we also have what are called third-party observers who observe a certain percentage of classrooms as well, just part of those checks and balances to make sure we are observing accurately. All that gets calculated, and sites get their performance profile for the year. And those are typically released in November the following year. But part of that buy-in is, you know, it helps the sites to see their own growth, and they can also let the parents of the children in their sites know, like, hey, this is what we're doing to help your children get ready for school, as well as other parents who might have just recently moved to the area. Other ways too is, you know, we offer so many training opportunities for teachers to increase their knowledge in the class tool, as well as just best practices with children. We also, you know, having that one-on-one coaching with our child care resource and referral coaches has also kind of helped them be more willing to continue to participate as well. As far as outside stakeholders, it kind of helps them see the importance of early childhood. You know, it's, you know, learning begins at birth. It doesn't begin when they enter kindergarten or first grade, you know, and the importance of that early learning and building those foundations, because it's not just helping the future, it's also helping now as well. You know, it's kind of, you know, if we can do all these things now, there's less things down the road that we have to fix later.
Yes, absolutely. My next question is around educators, because we were kind of talking about that. So I'm going to allude to that. You were talking about different trainings that they have, that you have available for them. Mm-hmm. So we already know that you're doing MMCI, right? Class group coaching. Mm-hmm. So let's talk some about the coaching that's available for the educators and what that training and ongoing support looks like.
Mm-hmm. So for our educators in our area, like I said, we house the Child Care Resource and Referral Agency for our region that covers about 11 parishes, counties for those outside of Louisiana, of course. And so those child care specialists, those coaches, they go out and they work with the child care centers as well as the family child care providers who are academically approved because, you know, not every, you know, our traditional child care isn't a fit for everybody. As well as, you know, Northeast Louisiana is a more rural area as well. So, you know, we have sometimes do have to deal with those child care deserts. And so those family child care providers definitely help to go to fill that. But our coaches, mm-hmm. you know, they'll go out and they'll work with the teachers one-on-one, and they just kind of meet them where they're at. And they do that in a variety of ways. I know very often there's some coaches that very much like to double code to shadow observations. So they have that direct knowledge of what happened to be able to use that to build on top of it for the teacher as well. So, you know, they'll work with the teachers one-on-one, kind of be like, hey, what are your goals? What would you like to do? And kind of work with them to help work, build towards those goals. And that may be that the coach models with the children in the classroom for the teacher. It also may also influence the trainings that we provide on a weekly basis that cover a variety of topics. It's, you know, it covers class topics, it covers developmental milestones, the different curricula that we see used in classrooms in our region. So those are just some of the educational supports, along with, you know, we'll also are able to provide grants to these child care centers as well, that take a variety of forms. I know, you know, in the past we've done what's, you know, a classroom makeover grant where, you know, there's an application process and, you know, the sites that are selected get to choose just one classroom. Unfortunately, we can only do one classroom at a time, just, you know, because we have our constraints as well. But we go in and we say, you know, we look at that classroom and say, okay, what do you have? What else do you need? Because, you know, you may have a teacher that's doing all right, doing well with what little she has. So it's like, you know, what could she do if she had all the shiny new objects, you know? And so we've been able to do classroom makeovers. We've done other grants to help, books and blocks grants, all STEM related grants to get more materials in the classrooms. And they always come with a training component to help the teacher better utilize those materials that they're bringing into the classroom.
What is the cadence of those one-to-one visits and those coaching sessions? What is the cadence of that?
It would vary from coach to coach and person to person. Because, everybody's different. The coaches, they have, they're assigned sites. So that way, those teachers know I'm always going to see this person. That way they can build those relationships, build that trust. And the coaches, they know the teachers that they're working with, and they'll know, okay, she's a little hesitant to change. So I'm just going to have to slowly work with her and kind of gain her trust. Other teachers, you're like, I know I can push her a little bit further. And so it truly varies. I know that's not the clearest answer.
Is there like a baseline number though? Like, regardless of where they are, on that continuum, this is how many should happen in a quarter or in a month.
Like visits with the teachers?
Yes, the coaching visit. Yeah.
Well, I'm not quite as familiar with all of those specific requirements of meeting with with teacher A X number of times. I can say it does vary does vary from teacher to teacher, just simply because some teachers are able to work towards their goal quicker than others.
Right.
Others may have bigger goals. Say that again. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was saying in site by site. I was agreeing with you, right? Educator by educator, but also depending on the site. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Some people are able to work towards their goals quicker, and some people might have those big goals that might take a little longer.
What about if you have educators that come mid-year? What does that process look like to put them into the fold of this class system?
We see teacher turnover from time to time. It's more common in the child cares. So once I hear that there is a new teacher that has started, directors are typically really fantastic of letting me know, hey, I just had a teacher left. I'm getting a new teacher. And depending when that observation is scheduled, if that observation is scheduled for next week, I might be like, because we need to have that teacher in the classroom for 2 weeks prior to being eligible to be observed. However, when it's a new teacher, I always do what I can to work with directors and work with sites when it comes to observations. So, when it's earlier in the observation period, it's much more, it's a lot easier to kind of, okay, well, I can definitely move this much further out. Closer to the end of the observation period, it gets a little trickier. So I always try to kind of push that observation out a little bit further so the coach can have time to get in there and work with that teacher as well, just so she can at least get that first observation. Something I always tell directors and teachers is, until you have that first op, think of this as your starting point. Until you have that first observation, you don't know where you are and you don't know where you want to go. So I always try to put that silver lining in there of just, it's my first one. You can only go up.
I love that. So we talked about implementation from the base, right? Just everyone getting reliable, building a system so that you can, train observers, right? And build capacity. We talked about the observation, right? So we've done this and now we have to observe the classroom. So let's talk a little bit about data. Like, who is responsible for planning how you collect the class data?
That would be me. So one thing that does make me very good at my role is I do have that type A personality. Where I want to be very organized and everything like that. So along with my class knowledge is that type A personality. So at the beginning of, before we start observations for the fall and the spring, I always send out a form to sites to just let me know, give me the names of your classrooms with the teachers as well as those age groups. That way I can ensure that the correct tool is getting used. And so sometimes when it's like a toddler pre-K mixed classroom, I might be asking, for those birth dates just to make sure the classroom might not have changed tools between fall and spring. Because and occasionally, you know, that does happen in childcare because enrollment can constantly change. Also, you know, it could be, well, we had to close this classroom because we didn't have enough children, or we opened a new classroom. So, you know, so I collect all of that information along with, you know, do you know of any days or dates that would not be ideal for an observation? You know, you might have a site that says, well, Wednesdays really aren't the best because we have chapel on Wednesdays, or we've got a field trip planned on this day. So once I take that information, I collect all that data, and then I have, you know, big, beautiful desk calendar where I have all of my observers placed on the days that they like to observe, color-coded, because for me, it helps to see that layout on a calendar on the days of the week. That way I know, oh, the 15th is a Wednesday. I need to avoid this day. So I collect all of that data and I put it into the early childhood portal, which also does allow us to run reports. So I know, you know, what observations are being put into the portal in that timely manner, which ones do I need to follow up on? If I have one that's planned to be a double code, you know, I can make sure that that's being tracked as well, because I have to have a certain percentage of those. If one's showing up that should have been a double code, I can, you know, contact that observer like, hey, did you forget to mark it, or did something just happen where it didn't, you know, take place? So I do a lot of work with that data.
You got kind of excited about it too.
Fantastic. Yes, I do strangely get excited about data these days.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. So what decisions have been influenced by your class data?
A lot. So many decisions are based off of the class data. So, you know, our childcare specialist teams, those coaches, they use that data to know which dimensions they really need to focus on when working with those coaches. It also helps influence, you know, what trainings do we need to offer? Sometimes, you know, I'm able to break down the data geographically as well to know, well, maybe this area looks like they need more help with quality feedback in that toddler tool. So let's see what kind of toddler quality feedback trainings we can provide for this area specifically, or even this site. So our data definitely drives how we coach and train our teachers. We also use that data to, you know, like I said, it goes towards the performance profiles. So that data can also go towards, you know, helping with some of those school readiness tax credit grants that we're also able to offer the child care centers as well. It influences quite a bit. What materials could we put into some of these classrooms to help further support these interactions as well?
So lots of things really are informed from that class data. Talk some about professional development. Can you elaborate on that? Right? How does it inform professional development? And you talked about some of the coaching, but what does that look like?
All right. So professional development for our teachers, or?
In any capacity, like the listeners want to know about all the pieces of your implementation in all the spaces. So whatever you can.
Absolutely. Okay. So like I said, you know, our professional development that we offer teachers comes through the trainings that we provide. We also, you know, we'll also have people from the various curricula that's out there come and do trainings on how to utilize that curriculum that they have in their classroom to be able to use it even further. And so that's always great when we can bring an outside person in, because it's a fresh voice. And, you know, sometimes teachers can, you know, we can say the same thing over and over, but then somebody else comes and says that it's, you know, can sometimes be a new idea to them. So, you know, we'll have outside entities come in from time to time to do trainings for these teachers as well. Every late summer, fall time, right before schools really get going into gear, we always put together what we call kind of like a mini conference, our early childhood refresher, to kind of, you know, get teachers ready for the next year of observations and implementing TS Gold, which is what the teachers use in the classrooms for that child assessment piece within Louisiana. And in this early childhood refresher, we always like to have a keynote speaker come and just kind of really, you know, feed into the teachers. And we offer topics that, you know, we do fun stuff during this time that they can take and learn. And then that Monday, start doing in the classrooms. And so that's some of the professional development that we offer for our teachers. For our coaches, we're always looking for opportunities to further our knowledge bases. Some of those opportunities for professional development, as I mentioned, is, you know, having other people on the staff trained to deliver the observer trainings, to be able to deliver the MMCI coaching sessions as well. For me, that MMCI, that's the gold for the teachers right there. You know, if a teacher really wants to further their knowledge in their practices, it's MMCI. So to get our coaches trained to be able to deliver that, can be able to get that out to them even further. Having our teachers, our coaches get trained in how to train teachers in the various curricula that get used, as well as being trained to train teachers how to use ages and stages, you know, the parent questionnaire that can, you know, sometimes and most definitely help possibly increase referrals to early steps or other services, because, you know, the sooner we can possibly catch something, the easier it is to be able to have that child get ready and successful for later on. We're always looking for ways to help our coaches and our teachers. Yes.
I hear a lot of things, right? And as you're talking about like curriculum, ages and stages and things, I'm curious, is there intention to align that with class, right? And how it enhances the interactions in the classroom, right? Mm-hmm. Is that happening alongside that?
Well, of course, you know, with ages and stages, that's a parent developmental screener. So it's a little bit different. But, you know, even the curricula that is used in our region do support those teacher-child interactions, that support those class interactions as well, because they're already that high-quality curriculum as well. So we do look at, you know, how can this help those best practices?
Most definitely. And ages and stages, yes, is a parent questionnaire, but there's so much to gain from that, right? We think about teacher sensitivity mm-hmm. and like really knowing our students, like where they mm-hmm. are and like able to, right? So even yeah. though it lives as an independent questionnaire, it does kind of lean into this work mm-hmm. you're doing with class.
Oh, absolutely. Because it helps that teacher know like, oh, I need to provide a few more fine motor activities. So how can I help scaffold that fine motor development as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All the things, all the data helps to really inform and transform what's happening in that classroom. So sounds mm-hmm. like a lot of that is happening where you are.
We definitely try our best to make sure.
What are some of the strategies that the coaches use to help educators adopt new practices?
Let's see. So some of the strategies that our coaches use to help these teachers adopt new practices, I know some of the coaches like to double code and shadow those observations so they have that direct knowledge of what really, you know, what truly took place during that observation in order to build on that teacher's current base as it is. And they're always meeting the teachers where they're at. Some teachers might be further down the road than others. Some might be just a little bit more hesitant. So, you know, some of the strategies may be, well, you know, we're just not going to worry about language modeling right now. Let's just look at how can we make this a more child-centered classroom and kind of build on that regard, you know, just kind of baby step them along the way to build upon their knowledge base.
Yeah. And you talked about like modeling earlier. And I was just wondering if there was like, what other tools in the belt, you know, you're
mm-hmm. absolutely, yes.
to share with the listeners.
Yes, absolutely. I know some of the coaches will kind of go into the classroom and videotape like a 1 20-minute cycle. And then, you know, a lot of the more in-depth coaching sometimes takes place during nap time, you know, because that's when the teacher can sit and speak with you. And during that time, you know, they'll sit down and watch the video together. And that really does allow the teacher to see, oh, I am using self and parallel talk. I didn't think, but I am using, I see where I'm doing self and parallel talk. So it lets them see some of those areas where they think, well, I'm not very strong here. When it's like, no, you are, we've been trying to tell you, now you can see it, as well as help them see, oh yeah, I could work on that a bit more.
I was just going to say, sometimes seeing it in action, right? Being able to reflect in that way. Mm-hmm. And those video clips are cool to see what is happening more objectively.
Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, I know a lot of the coaches, they'll do kind of a private training for that for a center that may be on a very specific topic that that center as a whole may possibly need as well. And it might be even with a select group of teachers within that site.
I love that. So what is that? Well, I guess it just depends on what the need is, right? Yeah. That with that isolated, very intentional, specific. Mm-hmm. I guess it just depends, but it can vary on what they would need. But I love that. It's kind of almost like a PLC, right? Within the space.
Mm-hmm. And that is absolutely. That's what we kind of refer to it as well.
Wonderful. So one of your strategies is also to create these professional learning communities where educators can support each other in moving forward in the work.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. All right. So, you know, when you first were introduced to class, you know, we got your response. Have your beliefs about class changed since then?
Yes, because the more at first it was like, oh, this is new. I will admit, I don't like change. It just, you know, change is scary, and that's why. But change can also be really good as well. It's something that I'm always learning, you know, professionally and at home. Just change is good. So, you know, at first it was really scary, but the more I've learned about the tool, and the more in depth that I've read about the tool, it really does. You can see how it is developmentally appropriate to those ages. Even a lot of people were nervous when Louisiana was switching from 2008 pre-K class to second edition. And, you know, we had a year before we fully did that. And that whole year, I'm sitting here studying up on it, getting ready to be able to communicate, you know, it has a new name, but it's still the same. And if you're an observer, that field guide is just, it makes it a lot easier to understand these interactions that you are seeing in the classroom. So it's just, you know, helping them understand, you know, it is developmentally appropriate. You know, these are things that you do see in the classroom. So it's changed for the positive.
Yeah. It's like, we've already got this. Why are we changing? Right.
It's just a new name. The interactions have not changed. The name is just new. That's all. That's all.
None of those things change. But I think what's, you know, to be celebrated about second edition is just all the things that you've observed in classrooms that you were just like, why is this not part of this? Right. So second edition just captures all of those interactions that represent all the communities that we serve as we observe classrooms. So that's the celebration of it. So yes, the interactions haven't changed, but we are more intentional about including all the children and all the communities, right? In those observations.
And expressing that in the language as well of the manual field guide of the field guide.
Absolutely. All right, Avon, through all of this implementation, what lesson did you learn that you would want to share with our listeners?
So what lessons have I learned through all this implementation? You can always improve. There's always ways and places where you can maybe do something a little bit better. You know, maybe a way that makes it a little bit easier, you know, from scheduling and how you go about scheduling. There's ways that you can improve on that. Ways that you communicate observations can also be improved. I try not to get overly confident. You always want that balance of confidence where you have that confidence that you know what you're doing, but you don't want to get overly confident because that's when mistakes start to happen. So always just keeping open to possible improvements and hearing what others are doing and think, you know, what is something that they're doing that I'm not doing that could work for me?
Oh, I love that. So thanks for sharing some lessons that you learned. My last question would be, what recommendations do you have for other programs who are wanting to implement class?
Lean on your resources, because you never know who might have a knowledge base that could be very helpful for you. You know, like I said, one of my favorite things to hear is, I'm a retired pre-K teacher. You are. Those retired pre-K teachers can be a wonderful resource because they know what it's like to be observed. They understand the tool. And it could also have, you know, having a former teacher observing you can bring a sense of comfortability to a teacher who might be a little bit nervous as well. Lean on your resources. Always be willing to learn from your mistakes as well.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Avon, for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much. This has been a wonderful opportunity. Thank you so very much. It's been great.
Listeners, we hope you enjoyed today's conversation and you follow along for another great season. You can find today's episode and transcript on our website, teachstone.com/podcast. And we'd love to know what you think. So drop us a like and a comment on Apple Podcasts or any of your other favorite streaming services so we can continue to make content that is for you. You can also send us an email at podcast@teachstone.com if you want to just say hello or you have some thoughts about or ideas about some episodes you'd like to see. And as always, behind great leading and teaching are powerful interactions. Let's build that culture together.
Thank you to today's team. Marnetta Larimer is our host. Our producers are Isabella Henriksen and me, Megan Cornwell. Editing help is from Castos. You can find Impacting the Classroom on our website at teachstone.com/podcasts, where you can also listen to our other show, Teaching with Class. Impacting the Classroom is a Teachstone production.